Hello and welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. Today, we're talking about threat modeling at scale so people like you and I and other security people can go on a holiday. Yes, we had Jeevan Singh, who is working for Twilio as their product security director. And we were talking about what is threat modeling so we can level the playing field for everyone. What does threat modeling look like in a cloud security, multi-cloud, hybrid cloud kind of world? And how can you enable your developers to do threat modeling the right way? Yes, that was the topic today. And I am so excited because what this means is people like you and I who have been talking about threat modeling for a long time, or for people who may not even know what threat modeling is, this is a great intro episode for that. And if you do know someone who is probably understanding or trying to figure out what threat modeling can look like, I would definitely recommend the conversation that, or at least the talk that Jeevan gave at B-Side San Francisco. I will link that in the show notes as well, so you can check out that talk. Definitely worth your time. And it talks about the four phases of the threat modeling approach that Twilio took. And oh my God, I'm so excited, so pumped. By the way, if you didn't know, Jeevan definitely has like a very, I'll just say a very meditative soft voice. So it was really interesting to just hear him talk. So, I mean, just an added flavor to that conversation. I hope you enjoy this episode. And as always, if you know someone who probably is wanting to learn about threat modeling or is going to find benefit from this episode, please do share this with them. And while you're on your Spotify or your Apple podcast or your Google podcast or your favorite podcast platform, and if you found this free episode valuable, it would really help us when you drop us a review or rating so we get discovered by more people, which means we can help out a lot more people. So that makes me really exciting. And thank you so much for everyone who came and said hello to us, Black Hat, as well as Def Con. It was really amazing and it was really awesome to hang out with a lot of you at Boston, Vegas, and London. And we have, I think we have a lot more of these coming in while we take Cloud Security Podcast on the road. But because you can hear my radio voice again, it's also because I'm back in the studio and back in Melbourne for now. We'll be announcing more cities that we are going to next month. So definitely keep an eye out for, or in this case, keep an ear out to listen in when this conversation happens as well. We'll keep you posted for that. Again, thank you so much for all the support. I look forward to talking to you on the next episode next weekend. Talk to you soon. Peace.
By bringing developers and security together, you don't have to choose between speed and security. Develop fast, stay secure.
I want to start with this. I think a lot of people know you already, but for the little two or three people who don't know who Jeevan is, how would you, I guess, share your background, a bit about yourself as well?
Yeah, I'm Jeevan Singh. I was one of those individuals that was on the development side for a really, really, really long time. I think I spent about 12 years on the software development side, and eventually made the decision to, it was a hard decision for me. I was being groomed for a lot of great things on the development side, but I had a fantastic VP of security that joined the organization and convinced me to start security. It took me about a month to make that decision. Should I stay in software? Should I move over to security? But literally after the first day of joining security, at the end of the day, I talked to him like, I don't know why it took me so long to make the decision. I'm never going back to development. I love development, but security is everything. So I helped build up the security practice from scratch at that organization, moved over to another one, helped build it up from there. Recently, I had moved over to a Segment, and the security practice was really pretty strong there. Worked that Segment to start thinking about next generation type of security programs. What can we do to really prepare us for what the future holds in store? And then while we're slowly starting to build out that next generation security program, we got acquired by Twilio. So now I'm looking at doing it at a massive scale in general. So looking forward to that.
Awesome. And I've got a few people who came online. So people are clearly excited about threat modeling, but unfortunately, not everyone knows what threat modeling is. So just to level the playing field, what's your version of threat modeling for people who may have heard of it, but don't really know what that is? So considering you've spent some time on it, how do you describe it?
Yeah, I'm glad that you asked about what flavor of threat modeling, because not every company, not every person does it similarly. And to tell you the truth, I learned that I was doing it incorrectly really early on in my career. So I had learned it very differently. And then chatting with other folks, better understanding what it is. Threat modeling is simply you're looking at a system and you're looking for the assets within the system and trying to figure out what the risks to those assets. And that's all threat modeling is. And you really want to focus on being risk-centric. So one of the challenges I had was when I looked at a particular system, this is earlier on in my career, I was looking for solutions when I really need to look at problems. And that's what really threat modeling is. We want to make sure that we're looking at any sort of system, any sort of feature, and just looking for what you think someone might be attacking. And then you want to make sure that you think about how they can attack it or what are some of the problems with that particular asset.
Was that switch to just think about problems? So in our case, it would be threats, I imagine.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, it took me, after I discovered that I was doing it incorrectly, it took me about a year to properly shift that in my mind, because I kept on looking for solutions when solutions come, but you have to find the universe of risks, the universe of threats, and then you can properly do the solutions. If you are thinking about solutions first, you might not think about all of the different type of risks associated with the attacks, and then you won't be able to write the right controls as a part of it. So it's a small little change in your mind, but when you start only focusing on the risks, it really helps you figure out, have a comprehensive controls in place to really protect your assets.
Interesting. And I think, as you mentioned, I just remind myself of one of the scenarios where I think I can't remember who I was talking to, but the way they approached application security was they went and thought of, what's a SaaS tool that I get or what's a SCA tool that I can get? And so to your point, it wasn't like, hey, let's take a step back and think about what the threats that actually affect this. Yeah. Instead, let's start with, what SaaS tool can I get or what SCA tool can I get or what DAS? Is that what you mean?
That really, like, when you are threat modeling your entire program, that's definitely that. Like, you would want to start with a risk-centered approach. So you would look at it and say, okay, what are the common attacks that are happening to my system? And maybe it is they're going after your third-party components. So you want to have a SCA that will help you identify that. Maybe it is you're worried about the insiders injecting really poor code so that they can add backdoors. So you maybe want to add a SaaS to it. But more importantly, what most application security engineers or product security engineers, they do, we will have an actual system that the developers want to build. And you want to make sure that you do threat modeling early. So threat modeling is very... The earlier you do it, everyone talks about shifting left. Threat modeling is actually shifting left. So you would have, during the requirements phase, product managers will come up with requirements for the feature. And you want to make sure that you still embed security there and they're not doing poor things with requirements. But right after they get the requirements, the developers will get the requirements and build a design. So once they've mostly fleshed out the design, once it's 80, 90% done, you want to involve security, and security will have a look. You do threat modeling together and you will say, okay, these are some of the potential problems that you might have a part of this system. And you can actually fix vulnerabilities before a single line of code is written. It's really, really cheap to fix it at that point. I come from an immigrant family, so I know all about being frugal. I want to make sure I fix things before they cost any money. So doing threat modeling in the design phase is great. Sometimes that doesn't happen and you have to do it after it gets deployed. And that could be expensive because when you go through, you might discover you have to do architectural changes. And if you have to do architectural changes, it's going to cost, like, you've already spent this much time doing it. You're going to have to spend a lot more time to actually fix it and remediate some of these problems. So the sooner you do it, the cheaper it is for an organization.
Yeah, 100%, man. And I think Vinith was also agreeing to what he said. Mindset shift. Mindset shift is a great advice because we've got a lot of people listening in who have been doing threat modeling for some time. I think Uday specifically talks about threat modeling quite a bit. So I'm sure him and other people would have a lot of questions around this as well. But because I'm kind of trying to balance a level playing field for everyone, because a lot of people, just to your point, threat modeling. Yep, I understand I need to save money. I understand I need to not have a lot more cost in building the product when I say save money later on, because then it just architectural change and it's massive cost that comes later on. Why is it important for a company that does code? Because everyone these days, everyone is writing a code, right? Like, I can't imagine a company which is not writing code. Even if your mail system, whatever the mail system would be, they have a software running in the background for everything to function. So why is threat modeling important? Like, I think, why can't we just do SaaS, DAST, and, like, you know, call it a day and move on?
One of the things that these tools do really well is they catch like the commodity-based sort of vulnerabilities. So maybe like in your JavaScript, you are doing certain type of poor behaviors. React, for example, and dangerously set inner HTML is a great example of it. Maybe you have a bunch of that. SAS will catch that very easily. But what threat modeling does is really find those business logic vulnerabilities where it's really hard for tooling at this point to discover that. Maybe we'll have some advanced AI tooling, actual real AI ML tooling in the future, where it will help us find those type of vulnerabilities. But until we get to that futuristic world, it's really hard to, with tooling, to find some of these business logic ones. So stuff like authorization vulnerabilities, broken access controls, those are really hard to discover with tooling because they don't have the context that they need as part of the code. So sitting down with engineers, discovering what the system does, what it's supposed to do, who should be using it, you can walk through all of those sort of situations. And you can have run other things that toolings don't do really well is denial of service attacks. It won't really find good places where you might have an AppDos or you haven't set up things correctly. So there are a lot of these vulnerabilities that static analysis, SCA, IaaS, DAS tools, they do really well. But threat modeling looks at the entire picture and it really helps you discover things that are really hard to discover through tools.
There's a comment from Uday as well. Tainted flow analysis of an app service from architecture design or diagram is what I do. What I do to identify Stride. Is that a good way to describe it?
Tainted flow analysis. Yeah, I think that like sometimes I also describe threat modeling as making sure that you look at the abuse cases, that sort of stuff. But yeah, one of the things that is really important to do is every company also does software development differently. So the more traditional, the more academic threat modeling, you have data flow diagrams and you look at data flow diagrams and discover the vulnerabilities through those diagrams. But you don't want like engineering, they're building sort of like, I think was it Uday? Uday was mentioning architectural diagrams.
Yeah.
Those are just as relevant. Like I don't want engineering to, I want to fit into the engineering workflow rather than have them fit into the security workflow. So if they had to write architectural diagrams, then they had to write data flow diagrams. It's going to add friction to the whole process. I want to make sure I come to them. If they're doing architectural diagrams like Uday is doing, then I want to come to them and say, okay, let's look at these architectural diagrams. Let's understand what the feature that we're building out and see where we can discover some of these vulnerabilities as a part of that system.
Thank you for the answer. And so Karthik has a question. Where does it fit in a CI/CD?
Yeah, that's a great question. It doesn't fit like a tool into the CI/CD. I have heard of some companies that if you haven't built out a threat model or haven't done things in the process, it can actually block you from pushing to production. There are very few companies that are that mature process-wise, but it's more of a process workflow type of item where what we've done at Segment and Twilio is initially we have a requirements document, a PRD, product requirements document. It gets built out, security looks at it, gives a thumbs up. Then it goes into a blueprint, an architectural blueprint. And from there, you will have a table where it has a lot of folks that will comment on it. You want to have architects involved, making sure that architecturally it aligns with the long-term company vision. You may have SREs involved to make sure that there is resiliency built into the actual feature that's mainly being built out. And you will want to have security, or if you are integrating with a third party, you might want to have a GRC or legal or other folks involved as part of the process. So it's more of a process type of workflow rather than actual like a tool where you actually fit it into the CI/CD pipeline. Having said that, if you are able to be mature enough where you have enough security engineers or in other ways, we talked a little bit about going on vacation. One of the things that we were building out at Segment and we're looking at building out at Twilio is we're really diving deep at teaching engineers how to threat model. And so I joined Segment late 2019. I joined the team. I flew down to SF. And when I went down there, I talked to Colleen, the CISO, and I'm like, okay, looks like you already have a program. I'm really good at building programs. Why did you hire me? I don't know what's going on. Like, you already have so many great, talented folks. We sat down, we talked about some Colleen's vision, and one of the things that she envisioned was reducing the operational workload on security engineers. And how do we do that? And we actually pushed some of the security work onto the engineers themselves. And one of which was actually doing threat modeling. So I sat down, we mapped out a self-service threat modeling program where we actually taught developers how to actually do threat modeling themselves. I wasn't 100% sure, at the beginning of the project, I'm like, okay, this type of impact it may or may not make. I spent 2 quarters teaching about 100, 120 engineers how to threat model. And after it was done, it actually blew my mind how well engineers, literally the first self-service threat model that was done. And how we did it was that first we trained them, and then we go into a phase we call observation phase. I'm going to give a little bit more context. When I learned threat modeling, I was watching my boss do it. And so I was shadowing my boss, and then I was reverse shadowing. So I would do the threat modeling and he would be watching me and giving me pointers on things that I'm doing well and not well. So after a lot of practice, I got better at it. And this is what I was trying to do for the developers. So first, in those observation phase settings, I'm reverse shadowing them. They're running the threat modeling themselves. And then I'm watching, seeing if they're doing it well or not well, and giving them pointers on how to do it better. So literally that first one, it was me and it was a principal security engineer. We went into it. There were very, very senior staff level engineers that were building out this feature. And me and the other security engineer provided zero value in that meeting. And it blew my mind how strong these engineers and how quickly they adapted to security. That wasn't the case for everything, but all of these more senior staff, principal level engineers, they're actually really good. Once you teach them how to understand what security is, they're able to digest it fast. One last thing I want to talk about this is that developers are way better at threat modeling their systems than security folks, 100% of the time. So this came up several times when I did threat models. I have about an hour to understand their system and then try coming up with threats. They work day in, day out for months, quarters, years on their system. They know exactly how their system works. So there are many times where I'd come up with vulnerabilities, great, but they would come up with stuff that there's no way I would be able to, I'd have to spend weeks on the threat model to dive deep enough into their system. So if you can teach developers how to threat model, you're going to get way, way better vulnerabilities.
Awesome. It's a great answer as well, man. I think, and thank you for sharing that, by the way. So that kind of is a good segue into the next segment that I've had in mind as well. Hopefully that answered your question, Karthik. Thanks so much for this, man. I've got a few comments quickly. I want to quickly go through them. So they mentioned SaaS task is late sometimes when you have your database exposed over the internet with default credential. This is where threat modeling helps. Awesome. Thank you for that, Uday. Ryan, diamond advice so far, man. There you go. He's got a fan here. I think it's your radio voice, by the way. I think the way you're talking, actually, I'm like, yes, tell me more, Jeevan. that's what it feels like.
Back in the day, saying that you have a talent for the radio was an insult. Say so your face isn't good enough to be presented. So yeah, I'm glad
face.
It's different.
Your voice, we need to be Jeevan. It's not your face. It's your voice. All right. That's Karthik said, oh, thanks for explaining. Rama, I think... It has, yes, which is kind of what you were saying. It's a broader spectrum. Thanks for the Rama as well. The question, okay, how much level of expertise required in programming to understand and be an expert in threat modeling? It's a pretty broad question, but hopefully you have a simple enough answer for Karthik to at least get some guidance.
Yeah, so this is a it depends sort of situation. One of the things that I really preach as part of my threat modeling workshops that I run for developers and actually other security folks is threat modeling is a team sport. You can't do threat modeling on your own. First, you obviously need the developers that are developing it, but you also need the right security professionals to help. So we are living in a cloud world and you need a lot of different security engineers. So I'm really good at application security, but if there's a infrastructure heavy type of feature that we're building out, I'm gonna pull in my cloud security counterparts. They're really good and knowledgeable in that area. If this particular area is super, super sensitive, I'm going to probably pull in my incident response, the CERT or our threat hunting team as well, because I want, they think very offensively, and I want to make sure that these offensive folks come in these certain sensitive areas. So how much level of expertise is required? It really depends on the type of threat model you're doing. It helps, I'm not going to lie. I've had over a decade of experience on the software development side, really understand, and it really helps. It makes it easier to communicate with engineers when you're coming up with solutions. You can iterate a lot faster. But some of the cloud security folks don't have that software development experience. They have a lot more on the DevOps side. So, and some of the incident response or threat hunting individuals, red team individuals, they don't have much at all experience in programming, but they have a ridiculous amount of knowledge on breaking things. So it really depends on the type of individual that you are that is helping with threat modeling. But if you're coming from application security side, yeah, it helps. It definitely helps. You don't have to be an expert, but being able to understand how to, finding vulnerabilities isn't hard, but you want to be able to find controls that work. And if you have a software development background, it really helps that way.
Oh, I think that's a good way to put it, because you're essentially trying to see, or maybe you're trying to recommend controls which may help solve a vulnerability rather than, it's not fixing per se. It could be fixing based on the situation, but primarily it's trying to find a control.
That's right. And a lot of the times it is the recommendation. How do we, and sometimes like maybe you discover something that has a ridiculous amount of risk and you can implement, it's going to take a month to implement this control to reduce it to zero, or maybe it's going to take a week to reduce it 75%. And being able to talk through those with the developers and understand the amount of effort that's required will really help you decide what type of controls that you want to put in place. The goal of threat modeling is not to eliminate all risk. That's bad for the business. The goal of threat modeling is to reduce risk and understand how much appetite we have for reducing risk.
Actually, that's a good point. And by the way, thanks for the question, Karthik. Hopefully that was interesting. Because what you said there is bang on the money. You're not trying to convince and find out all. Maybe you are maybe trying to find all risk so you can manage them. Will that still be right?
You're not trying to control
all of them, right?
That's right. You want to find the universe of vulnerabilities as part of the threat modeling practice. You're not going to find everything. We're humans. We're not perfect. As long as you can find the vast majority, and especially for our program, we want to find the critical, high, medium ones for sure. And low informational, if you don't find them all, it's not end of the world. You'll find some, but you may not find all of it. But the goal isn't, and once you discovered all of these vulnerabilities, the goal isn't actually to eliminate it all. You want to eliminate the amount that actually makes sense for the business. So if you're at a startup, maybe you're okay with having a few more vulnerabilities open because the goal is to survive. You want to make sure that you are putting out a solid product and you're finding product market fit. But if you're at an enterprise or a crypto company, you want to make sure that you're eliminating a vast majority of vulnerabilities in general.
Right. And I think to your point, in that case, you know how people toss it up in dev, test, and then prod as well. Should this be when the solution is being made?
Oh, I love it. I love these questions. Okay. We have a philosophy for that. So there are some stuff that we find that are critical vulnerabilities. So ideally it's done in the design phase and we fix it up in the design phase, but we will have, say if there's a particular threat model, we might have 12, 14 vulnerabilities that were discovered as a part of it. We will actually work with the developers and say, when does it actually have to be fixed? Some have to be fixed by alpha, some have to be fixed by beta when we're actually using external clients, that real clients that are using it. And then some we say that has to be fixed by GA, and some can be post-GA. So we work really, really closely to identify and really understand the vulnerability itself and the severity of vulnerability. And once we have that, then we can work with the engineering team and say, when do we expect you to actually fix it?
Interesting. And I think you touched on cloud security a bit earlier as well. You might work on cloud security team. So just for because cloud security podcast as well, what would be an example workflow for that kind of a threat model where you have to work with a cloud security, team, for lack of a better word?
Whenever, so there's a bunch of different scenarios. Integration between an outside third party. I'd want to make sure I'm pulling in my cloud security folks and we're doing the whatever type of advanced communications with them. So if we have to lock, how do we make sure that no one's listening in on these sort of conversations? Anytime we spin up, we're AWS heavy type of organization. We also use GCP and Azure, but we're doing heavily in AWS. Anytime there's new type of services in AWS, I want to make sure I'm bringing in our cloud security folks with that. And a lot of our tools are now cloud native. So it's like half of the application development is already cloud-based. We want to make sure that the right permissions, we have least privilege enabled everywhere. So we'd work closely with our cloud security folks to make sure that that is enabled as well. The vast majority of our threat models are either CloudSec heavy or ProdSec heavy. So it would be one or the other team, but there's a good one that requires both of us to be in attendance for.
And that's kind of where I was going with, because most applications these days, I mean, all the CSPs out there, and this is kind of a good link to the question that Julian has asked over here, thoughts on including the CSP administrators as threat agents as part of the threat model. And which is kind of like made up because to what you said, most applications these days are either product heavy, they don't like no code or whatever they want, like whatever AI or machine learning they're doing, or on the other spectrum where they are very cloud native, using primarily cloud services. And traditionally, threat modeling, a lot of people talk about, they're like, well, you know, it's a closed, for lack of a better word, it's in between the four walls. It's not outside the four walls. So now we're talking about territories that is outside our control as well sometimes. So CSP administrator, your cloud service provider like an Amazon or Microsoft or Google Cloud or whatever, how does this fit into that kind of space? And maybe if, to your point, you gave an example earlier. So just say someone has, I don't know, I've got a regular website, which is I'm hosting on AWS. And hopefully that answers Julian's question as well. We have just a regular thing. How would you kind of recommend? Because I know I'm just trying to place the skeletons of where you can see where this would fit in. I don't know. We don't have to go into the detail of it, but just into
it's a great question. So one of the things that you really have to understand is who are the threat actors trying to attack you?
Yeah.
If it's a script kiddie, okay, you want to build the controls that will protect against it. And then you sort of build up a script kiddie, hacktivist, insider threats. Are you worried about nation states? So you want to make sure that you build your system towards it. So as part of the threat modeling process, especially at mature companies, they know the type of threat actors that they're dealing with. So they want to build in the controls based on that sort of threat actor. So am I afraid that AWS admins will be attacking our infrastructure? Potentially in certain areas, maybe you have really, really sensitive customers, high value targets, as we like to call them. Maybe they're part of our system and we need to go that extra step, or maybe they're paying us a lot more to go through those extra hoops in order to protect them even against wherever we're hosting it. So definitely, the great thing about threat modeling is you can decide how the level of sophistication you want to do for every system or feature that you want to build out. And then if you are really worried about nation states, or you're worried about insiders at Amazon, or if you're insiders at your own company, you can build that as part of when you're scoping your exercise. You want to make sure that as during the scoping phase of the threat model, you figure out, get everyone on the same page. These are the type of risks that we're concerned with. And when you actually look at your system, you account for those risks and try diving deep and discovering vulnerabilities.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing that as well, because I think you hit it on the nail as well, because it also is based on the company as well. Not everyone's worried about nation state. Well, hopefully not everyone's worried about nation state, but we've gone through the main comments as well. Thanks, Jeevan. So you got the answer, and we've got Ryan. Haha, absolutely. Oh, this is kind of the radio voice, man. I think you could totally do the Calm app, you know, the meditation app. You could totally do that, by the way. And I'm like, I just realizing as I'm listening to you, I'm like, oh, he's such a good voice to listen to. And like, oh, that's why, like, you could be like a total, like, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. You just do that the entire time.
It seems like there's good money in that place. My side gig.
Okay, people, we're turning into a meditation show now. We're going to meditate for the next 30 minutes over here. Sweet. Awesome. So Julian got the answer as well. Thanks for that, Julian. And good question from Rama as well. How does the complexity increase considering multi-cloud hybrid environments? Do you come up with a multi-stage approach?
Oh, I love this question. I haven't run into this too much. There have been certain systems that while I was working at Segment, that we did have a multi-cloud situation. And it was, Rama, you're right. It is very complex. Fortunately, I had a real strong cloud security team that helped us through that complexity. And we got to a place where it was risk acceptable. It wasn't perfect. We got to a place that it was risk acceptable. And over the quarters afterwards, we slowly kept on bringing down the risk because we weren't fully happy with the solution. So sometimes, a lot of times in security, you get the choice of a lot of bad options. And then you have to choose the least bad option. But the good thing is security is also a marathon and not a sprint. So that means that we have a lot of time to continue iterating and getting better. So in that particular situation, I haven't done too much multi-cloud, but in that particular situation, we put out a solution that worked in the short term, but we kept on iterating to a place where I was very satisfied with the result at the end of it. I do expect us at Twilio to do a lot more multi-cloud stuff in the future. We'll definitely have to connect whenever we dive down that, and we can share different type of styles and design patterns that we can use there.
Awesome. Thanks for that question as well, Rama. So I think we kind of took a nosedive into a very quickly going, very, like almost like I was thinking this would come towards like a bit more later, but now, since we kind of have explained a bit more about how threat modeling fits into the cloud security space, we've also kind of leveled the playing field for what threat modeling actually is. Just talking about rolling it out, because I mean, the topic was we are allowing security teams to take holiday. How can the security team take holiday in a threat model situation? Like, what was the idea behind this? And I'll link the talk in the show notes as well for people to kind of hear it as well. What was the idea behind this? And maybe we can go from that into what's involved in rolling a threat model program into an organization?
Yeah, a great question. So going back to the conversation that I had with Colleen, our CISO, we really want to reduce, security engineers are engineers and we need to engineer solutions. We're not an operational team where we are analysts and we take things in, work on a ticket, spit it out. And that doesn't really scale well with the organization. We don't hire as many security engineers as we do engineers. So in order to really, really be proactive, we want to make sure that we had a solution for our operational workload and working with engineers to tackle it. And so we came out with a program where first we train the engineers on threat modeling, then sort of talked about being observation, like reverse shadowing, making sure that the engineers are doing it right. And then they get to a point where they don't need us to be there. So they would actually do the threat models on their own. And then we would review the artifacts after the fact, just to make sure everything's good. And then when we're actually satisfied that they're doing a good job, we don't have to, it was a security optional phase after that. We don't have to be there. We don't even have to review the artifacts. So as we were doing it through Segment, we're really strong with training and we're doing really well with the observational phase. And some of the teams were strong enough to do the actual threat modeling on their own. And we'd review the artifacts from that spot. And so it was slow migration to that particular space. And I'm actually confident with at least a handful of engineers that there are some really strong engineers and some of our SRE are just as capable security engineers that we're fully confident that whatever they put out, we don't have to double check, triple check their work. But our goal was to take a sample. So if they did 10 threat models, we'll take a look at one just to make sure everything they're doing is correct. our assumption is, as we are able to really push the threat modeling over to the engineering team, then we can look at other type of engineering, security engineering related work that we can work on and really reduce the operational workload. We're just joked about taking a vacation because security work is like a hydra where you cut one head off and two of them pop up. But it really would have relaxed us quite a bit knowing that the engineering team is doing threat models well themselves. And going through the exercise with them, I know that they can actually do it really well. So if we are able to really remove ourselves away from... one thing I should add is even in this particular program, the security engineers will still be involved with certain type of threat models. We do trust the engineers, but anytime there's PHI going through our system, PII, PHI, I want to make sure I'm involved. Or if we're working, we're redoing our authentication or authorization controls, I want to make sure that I'm a part of that sort of stuff. So it'll hopefully eliminate 80% of the threat models that we need to be a part of, but those 20%, I want to make sure that we're sort of part of. So it will really, the goal of the program was to really reduce our operational workload and put it to the engineering team. What we learned was they're way better at it. They find way more vulnerabilities. And this is the type of program that we really need to release to most companies in the industry.
Awesome. And I think to your point then, because that was a good segue into another question that came from Pani as well. Who is minimum representation? So what's minimum representation you require in a threat modeling session?
Yeah. So there's two sides of it. One is the engineering side. That is actually, so a lot of things that I've talked about is engineering heavy because I'm a product security engineer. I work really closely with engineers themselves. You can threat model anything. So a lot of the things that I'm going to talk about is on the engineering side. So first, you need the engineering representatives. You need the individual that actually came up with the design. You need the people that are actually doing the software development work themselves. So those are the minimum on the engineering side. On the security side, it really depends on the type of feature that's being built out. If you are having... you want to likely have your product security engineer, and you might want a cloud security engineer there as well. Those are the minimal on the security side. But if you want to be a little bit more advanced, I talked about adding cert and or your red team as a part of that as well. I've also pulled in GRC or privacy at times as well, because sometimes if I'm passing PHI through our system, I know a lot about security, but my privacy and my compliance knowledge of all of the different legislative regimes in the world isn't that great. I do want to bring in the experts for that. So I definitely have brought in GRC and privacy in some of these threat models, and they can answer things right away for us as well.
Awesome. And thanks for sharing that as well. Because I think to your point then, if the minimum representation, I guess it depends on the application that you're trying to build as well. And that's where you mentioned the cloud security people earlier, depending on what you're trying to troubleshoot. Because as we are trying to talk about this, one thing that comes to mind is a whole cultural change as well. Because a lot of organizations would listen to this go, Jeevan, great idea, man. But my company has been doing this without threat modeling for a long time. How do I, like, there's a backlog that is obviously being created ongoingly. Is there any advice for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Hard advice to give. The cultural work comes two ways. One is top down and one is bottom up. So you definitely want to work bottom up and make sure that the engineers understand why security is important. But ultimately, it has to come top down. The engineering leadership, the executives have to say that security is important. We're going to change how we do security. And this is how we're going to work going forward. It's going to be rough. I remember a couple of companies that where we built out the security team from scratch. It literally took about a year to culturally build security in. Just first was a lot of people don't know what security does. So letting them know when you can pull us into conversations and communicate with them on that. And then other situations, it was... I've been here for 10 years. I know how I'm doing things. Get out of my way. In those situations, you work with that individual. And if you can't work with it, that's okay. Sometimes you can use the carrot. Sometimes you have to use the stick and bring folks in line. I'm much more of a carrot type of person.
I like all the meditation that you've been doing.
Much more of a carrot type of person. But yeah, it can be difficult. But when we are moving to the self-service model, one of the things that I was selling the engineering team was, it's with us doing this, we're going to move faster. As we scale, it's going to be much faster for engineering to do the threat modeling than it would be for security. Security team is small. We're going to bottleneck you. You're going to be slow with that. Engineering team is much, much bigger. So you can, it's easier to scale that way. And in addition, there's like, is very little additional work on the engineering team. You have to do the threat modeling anyways.
Yeah,
it's going to take an extra 15 minutes or half an hour per threat model if engineering is leading it. So it was really easy to sell on the segment side when we rolled it there, because ultimately it was going to be much, much more beneficial for the segment team, for the engineers. The velocity is going to get higher. We're going to see much fewer vulnerabilities if everything is being threat modeled. And if we see a lot less vulnerabilities, it means you're going to do a lot less security work. You're going to be focusing much more on the engineering work, and you're going to be shipping more features. It seems kind of weird. Like, the more we threat model, the less security we're going to do. But that's how it works. The more we threat model, the better we get at threat modeling, the much less you're going to have to do security work, which is way better for everyone. It's a win-win-win.
Why can't people start with that first? If they just start with that first, it's like, hey, we won't have to bother you later on if we just do this in the beginning. Because a lot of you talk about the fact that, oh, we need to know all the threats. We need to know what are we protecting against, what controls do we need. But to your point, if you just start with, hey, we won't bother you later on if we just do these things, and then, you know, you do whatever you want, I guess, until obviously it's a complex situation or whatever, I think maybe that could have been a better way to approach this. And to your point about the cultural thing as well, and I don't imagine it's a small feat. It takes a while. So being patient with that would obviously help.
Absolutely. You have to be patient. You have to actually sell the vision. You have to sell the vision and do it. And you also have to approach threat modeling in a way that engineering can digest it. So there are situations where you need to do a multi-month long threat model or a security architecture review. Yeah. If you do that for every single thing, engineering is not going to engage with you. You have to make sure it's lightweight enough, it's digestible enough for them to do it. So I ran into this problem much, much earlier in my career, where our quality assurance team was doing really heavy QA type of risk analysis really early on. Every time we built out a feature, it was going to cost 3 hours for us to do it. That thing lasted maybe 2 or 4 weeks before everyone's like, we're not doing it anymore. So you have to make sure that something is light enough that is digestible and palatable for the engineering team. And you just start slowly, like start with really strong engineering teams that are okay to do security, show how well they are doing it, and then compare them to other teams in the organization that aren't doing it well, and show why it's important to do security and doing threat modeling.
What's an example carrot out of curiosity to move the needle?
Example carrot would be just the showing the organization how little security work folks are doing. So we have a lot of different reports where it shows the organization, which parts of the organization have a lot of vulnerabilities that they have to work on and which parts don't have that much of vulnerabilities to work on. So that's definitely a carrot. And I love recognition. Like my boss, he built out a security leadership or security points leaderboard, sorry, is security leaderboard, where anytime someone did something well security wise, we'd give them points. And there was a competition. There was an inherent, we gamified security that way. And there was an inherent competition. And there were people that after they've discovered a vulnerability or a fix a vulnerability, they reach out to the security team and say, hey, I want to make sure I got my security points for it. So that worked out really well at an organization. Yeah.
Fair enough.
A few different carrots there.
a few little carrots. Because I think we're coming back to the whole, I guess, obviously, by the way, you've been quite favorite. So Uday has kind of declared you're his favorite guest so far as well. So you should definitely practice that meditation voice a lot more. And Rama is looking forward to a deep dive session on this topic as well, which I've got a few ideas for. But so this has been really awesome going on, man. I think, and I'm just curious. So we spoke about threat modeling, we leveled the playing field. We also spoke about how can people start deploying it. We also spoke about how they can scale it. And I would refer to the show notes for the talk that you did, where you explained that whole, the four stages of the threat modeling process as well. Because a few things that are kind of coming to mind, because we spoke about the cloud security and multi-cloud and hybrid cloud angle as well. In a threat modeling context, you've got the right people in the room and you've kind of gone through the process. How long do you typically say people should spend on it? Because, I mean, you know how people love planning. I mean, I can just keep making up, for lack of a better word, threats all day long. Do you guys time box it and go, hey, this is the time we sort of allocate?
We time box it, but it also depends on the size of the initiative that we're doing. So I remember at Segment, we're looking at completely changing how we implemented Segment, making it much more customer centric. And it made sense, rather than actually doing a threat model and coming up with vulnerabilities, we just embedded a security engineer into the project. They were part of the standups. They would answer the security team immediately, the engineering team immediately. And it literally reduced months, maybe quarters off the project itself. So it really depends on the situation. We typically want to have smaller, working in an agile organization, we want to have smaller threat models. And usually I spend about half an hour initially to talk to the initial engineer to better understand what they're building out. I'll probably spend another half an hour just to let it sink in, try to come up with the vulnerabilities on my own. And then I'll go to the threat modeling session, where it's usually typically an hour and a half, and we work together to sort of come up with the vulnerabilities together. But you can't do that for the multi-cloud situation, where you actually have to have a bunch of different ones. So another great example of it is someone on my team, Alejandro. He was working on this particularly large feature, and he ended up having to do 9 or 10 threat models as a part of that functionality. It was very large. And a lot of them he did with a few security folks, but one of which was a particularly sensitive area where we pulled in a lot of different security folks because we want to make sure that we had a lot of eyes on it and we captured all of the vulnerabilities as a part of it. So it's a hard question to answer, but you want to make sure that, again, the process is small and agile and it fits in so that you don't want to add friction. You want to make sure that the process is smooth. So typically an hour, hour and a half is what we do for our threat models.
And where I was going with that was also the fact that once you've discovered a few threats that you're working with, and say to what you were saying, for security people to be able to go on a holiday, we train developers and engineers to, I guess, be able to do this themselves as well. How do you judge the quality? And maybe judge is a strong word, but how do you maintain quality of threats being identified? Or, you know, because sometimes some people may look at a particular vulnerability or a threat and go, this is probably the most important. But in your mind, actually, I don't think that's really the most important thing. There's this other one they should be looking at. Like, you know, there is that call sometimes we as security people would make with engineers. But how does that kind of play a role in a whole self-service based threat model?
Yeah. That's something that we're still working on. And one of the things that I want to do is, as security, we always are continuously learning and growing and getting better. I cringe at all the software that I wrote earlier in my career. I'm hoping that I've gotten way better at doing software development now, but we grow and we learn. And so one of the things that I was really looking forward to is, we had these 100 level courses that just really the basics about threat modeling and getting people off the ground there. But I had goals with 200, 300, 400 level courses and going ridiculously deep and making sure that we have that continuous training for those folks that are working on these projects. So after a year or after 6 months, we would go through that next level of training so that get them even more deeper into threat modeling itself. So that was the goal from that, to sort of make sure that we are still maintaining the high quality. But it's also as part of the security optional phase where we're not involved with the threat modeling. The goal of it was actually, we want to make sure that we're sampling. Once every 10, once every 15 threat models, let's have a quick look. Let's peek. Mm-hmm. Are they finding all of the critical high medium vulnerabilities? If they're not, let's go back and talk to them and find out why they missed some of these really, really important ones. So it's sort of like that motto, trust but verify. We trust that they're doing the right thing, but let's verify and make sure that the quality still remains high there.
Yeah, and I think maybe another one at the tail end of this is also, how do you keep them informed of the new vulnerabilities? Like if Log4j comes up, I don't know, Log4j part two, and as I said, there is a volcano erupting somewhere as well. It's like, oh my God, it's Log4j part two. How do you folks recommend keeping them up to date?
I love that question. This is one of the things that I've learned as part of this journey. If you can really evangelate security, like, let me take a step back. So pre-COVID, security would be sitting in the middle of development and you hear things and you walk and you talk and talk to people and really implement security there. Once COVID hit, we're all stuck in our homes. We're not really going into the office. So you're not part of those conversations where you can really help engineers. So our initial goal was like, let's have a monthly check-in with engineers. Let's do a monthly workshop where they can learn a little bit more about security. We started off with that. Then we rolled out the threat modeling training. Once we rolled out the threat modeling training, this is anecdotal. There's no way for me to measure it. Security culture went through the roof. It was absolutely insane. My favorite story around this was, I had an engineering manager, East Coast. Most of the security engineers were on the West Coast. So Segment is a heavy Node and Golang shop. And there was a high vulnerability that Node had released a fix for. So this engineering manager, he found out that they released it. He patched his team. He scanned all of Segment code base, discovered two other areas where it's impacted. He identified those folks had to be, they're also on the East Coast. So they're aware, they created tickets for it. And they were going to plan on releasing a fix in a couple of days. This was all done before a single person on the West Coast even woke up. So what I noticed that has happened is once the engineers they understood what security is, what threat modeling is, they have a sense of pride. They want to be really good at it. And they themselves were like fantastic at it. Really, really shocked me at how well and how passionate they became about security. And we have many of those sort of engineers still at Segment, and definitely a ton of them at Twilio. So you just have to find the right message to communicate with your engineers, and they themselves will be interested in it. Another anecdotal stuff. I've started seeing a lot more, at least there's a Segment has an office in Vancouver. I've seen a lot more of the Vancouver engineers join OWASP Vancouver and learning more about security from that standpoint. So
wow.
Security is interesting and engineers find it interesting as well.
Interesting. I mean, it's funny because, you know, you say that and I truly believe that's possible also because a lot of us do security day to day. A lot of us lock our doors when you walk out of the house. That is security. No one's really telling you, but in your mind, I mean, you do it by default because you know what the importance of it as well. But a lot of people are already doing it in their non-work context. Suddenly, I think we just have to reshape the education in why it's important in an organization context as well. This is super awesome, man. I think I wish I had a lot more time. So the one of the questions that I also have for you is just around learning about threat modeling. And obviously the way you've deployed, I think there are different threat modeling. There are different types of threat models, Stride and others. I'm assuming your favorite one is Stride.
Yeah, I guess it's one of the more popular ways of threat modeling. And all of us at Segment and now at Twilio are a lot more familiar with it. So we like using Stride to discover vulnerabilities. When I tell what I tell our developers is Stride is great. It doesn't really matter the type, like, I don't want you to get fixated if you found a tampering vulnerability and just labeling it tampering. Stride is just a tool. It's a tool that we use to discover vulnerabilities. And if you find things that are outside of Stride, it's okay as well. Like the goal of threat modeling is just to find vulnerabilities. But Stride is a lot easier for us to just implement. It's there's so much content on Stride out there.
Yeah, and where can people learn about threat modeling in general? Because obviously they can hear for you here talk as well and talk and learn about how the self-service threat modeling works, and they can also take holidays. But in general, where do you send people when they want to learn threat modeling?
Yeah, I think we're really bad as a community on threat modeling, just in general. Like when I started out, there wasn't many resources. We're slowly getting there. One great place, and it's free, is the OWASP Slack. So OWASP has a Slack that you can join. There's a threat modeling channel with literally world-class threat models, threat modelers in there. So a lot of the folks that are academic, know a ton of things, that run actual full day, full week long threat modeling classes, they're just in that channel answering questions. So So there's a bunch of them as a part of it. Highly recommend, it's free. You can ask questions, people respond back all the time. Highly recommend joining that. The best way to learn threat modeling is to actually do threat modeling. You'll do it poorly at the beginning, but as you slowly start exercising that muscle, you can get better and better and better. That's the best way to actually do it.
Awesome. Well, that was the final question. I've got three more questions for you, man. I think which are fun questions for people to, like, they haven't had enough of the meditation voice. So we're going to have three more questions just to help them learn a bit more about you. And these are very just fun questions, man. First one being, what do you spend most time on when you're not working on threat modeling or technology?
Usually taking the children to and from activities these days. So I got two young boys, 8 and 5. Yeah, me and my wife, we spend a lot of time. So it's they're the joys of our life. So mostly spending time with the kids. Yeah.
Awesome. And what is something that you're proud of but is not on your social media?
Oh, man. Oh, that's a great question. I think one of the things that I take a lot of pride in is trying to uplift and help others. So I had a lot of help getting to where I am in my career. It takes a community to raise a child sort of situation. So a lot of folks really helped me out, and I try to pay it back by helping others as well, because I couldn't get where I was without other folks' involvement. And I want to make sure I pay it back and help other people get to the places. We have a lot of smart people like at the junior intermediate stage of their career in security. And I know, like, even on my team, I have a ton of really, really smart people that I know, given the opportunity, at some point they're going to go way past what I'm capable of. And I look forward to actually reporting into them at some point in the future as well.
That's so cool, man. I think I also look forward to a day when I think people would have helped in, I guess, sometime now and in the future. They do awesome things and like, oh yeah, I remember this person. The last question, what's your favorite cuisine or restaurant that you can share?
I'm Punjabi. Punjabi food is Northern Indian.
I'll take that as an answer because I think I love it as well. I think, in fact, I had it last night as well. There you go. So this was a great episode, man. I really enjoyed it. I think I definitely need to bring you back on as well. In fact, Vinita has also asked for it already. Please bring Jeevan back in the future. And you need to bring your meditation voice as well. We should do some meditation session while we're like, breathe in, breathe out.
We'll start the next one with that.
Where can people find you, by the way? If people have any follow-up questions, where can they connect with you and find you?
Hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm Jeevan Singh on LinkedIn. I actually created an email alias for when we open sourced the threat modeling training at Segment. The whole point was, like, it is fairly generic training and it can be applied to any organization. So I also created an email alias, SSTM, self-service threat modeling at segment.com. So send an email there. We can talk more about threat modeling as a part of that. But I think I'm most, oh, and ask Jeevan Singh on Twitter. I'm much more on LinkedIn than Twitter, but just that's another way to get a hold of me.
I'll put the links in the show notes for the episode as well. But dude, thanks so much for coming in, man. I really appreciate this and looking forward to having you again.
Yeah, it was such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. All right, everyone else, we'll see you next weekend's episode, and I'll talk soon. Stay safe.